Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody get up.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That was Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke. And if that doesn't make you want to get up and dance, then you ain't living. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and we start a brand new week, the 1st of November. I cannot believe that we are on the south side of the year. I woke up, it was Christmas. I woke back up, and it's almost Christmas again. It was just Christmas yesterday. I am really tired of Christmas being every day of the week. The year's flown by, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you, the numbers on this show are growing like crazy. We are at 67,000 plus listeners just on this show. We are at 84,000-85,000 listeners worldwide, including all of the podcasts. We are going to reach 100,000 listeners real soon, and it's all because of all of you. I am so, so proud of my listeners and my guests that keep coming back, that ask to come back, that want to come back, that love to come back, like my guest tonight, Stephanie Osborne. It's so humbling, and I appreciate all of y'all so, so much. So, oh, and a great shout out to the great country of Australia. They're 96% of our listening base, and they have given us the wonderful blues band, the Teskey Brothers. They are Roy Orbison and B.B. King and Johnny Lang and Eric Clapton, and throw a little Billy Joel in there and a little Robert Johnson in there and roll them all out together, and you've got the Teskey Brothers. If you haven't heard them, go listen to them. They're magnificent. So with that being said, we're going to start our week off with the bang. She is a returning guest. She's been on the show several times, and every time she comes, I'll learn something new. Author Stephanie Osborne is going to launch two of her new books tonight here on this show. And few can claim the varied background that she has. She's known as the Interstellar Woman of Mystery. She is a veteran of more than 20 years in the civilian space program, as well as various military space defense programs. Stephanie worked on numerous space shuttle flights and the International Space Station, and counts the training of astronauts on her resume. Stephanie's space experience also includes space lab and ISS operations, variable star, astrophysics, Martian, alien, I hope I pronounced it right, geophysics, radiation physics, nuclear, biological, and chemical weapon effects. This woman is absolutely amazing, and I love having her on the show. Welcome, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Yvonne. How are you?
I am good. Like we talked about earlier, we're both busier than two long-tailed cats in a room full of rocking chairs.
That's the truth.
And you did it. You released two books, kept us updated on tropical storms, tornadoes, and hurricanes, helped me make the decision to get my husband the hell out of Dodge because of Irma, all while you were sick. And you and I talked about this a little bit before the show. And you're from Alabama, I'm from Georgia, and there's something about us Southern women that even if we get knocked in the head with a 2x4, we just get back up and keep on going.
Well, you know, you kind of got to. If people are counting on you, you do what you got to do to get the job done. I'm from Tennessee originally, by the way. I've lived in Alabama now longer than I lived in Tennessee, but I grew up in Tennessee.
And it's the same thing, and like we talked about before, I don't know if it's the Scotch-Irish background that most of us came from, if it's the genetics that our female women in our ancestry carried for centuries, or if it was the fact that when the women came to this new country, many of them left an area that was hard living anyway. When they came to this country, it was even harder, and it was either the women survived or generations didn't go on.
Well, yeah, and it's probably a little of all of that, really, when it comes right down to it. But, you know, I look at it as I got jobs to do. I got people counting on me for stuff, so, you know, If it's in me to do it all, if I can get up and do any of it, I do. And that's just...
And you don't find us complaining either.
Not too much. I don't keep my mouth shut if I'm uncomfortable about something, but I don't make a big deal out of it. You know, the people close to me know, okay, Steph's not feeling good, she's hurting, you know, whatever. But as a general rule, the face I show to the public is smiling and, hi, you know, do you need something? Okay, fine, let me go see what I can do. And I just keep going.
There's
you know,
some,
if I gotta feel sick, at least I can feel useful, dang it.
Exactly. Well, you know, they say that misery is its own worst enemy. So if we're sick and miserable, everything around us becomes almost an impossible task, which makes our life completely miserable. So why not just put on our big girl panties and put one foot in front of the other and say, you know what, I got this. What's the worst that can happen? I'm going to die? Well, we're all going to die. So why not make the best of it while we're here?
Yeah, if I can leave something behind that was worthwhile, you know, that's fine. I was really, really happy to find that my putting out the weather alerts and stuff was helpful to you. I never know sometimes when I post stuff on social media like that if it's just going off into the bit bucket or if somebody's actually reading it and making use of it.
Honey. I looked for those posts every few minutes because, you know, you remember Jack had just gotten out of the hospital from having a colon resection because of colon cancer. His surgery wasn't even a week old when we had to flee. And all of his medical equipment is electric driven. His scooter, his CPAP machine, his nebulizer. His insulin has to be kept refrigerated. So everything that he takes to stay alive depends on electricity. And I could not risk, and on top of that, he's got chronic COPD. So if it's hot and humid outside and I can't get him cooled down, he'll smother to death.
Yeah.
So I couldn't risk it. And our local meteorologists, they were all over the map. And you are the one that kept the focus on where this thing was tracking and how big and bad she really could be. And as soon as I read one of your last posts, I told him, I said, we're leaving on Wednesday. I said, because I'm watching the news on television. And I said, and my friend Stephanie, who knows these things, is telling me things that are ringing bells in my head. And we got to get out of here. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
I'm very glad to have done it. I had a lot of people. In addition to all the other stuff I've done, I've become a National Weather Service certified storm spotter, and so you know I've studied the stuff for years. I've had that kind of training and everything. I've been in tornadoes. I've been in hurricanes, and I know what it's like to go through them, and I know it ain't fun.
No.
And so I started having people asking me, Steph, we've got this thing forming down in the Caribbean. What does it all mean? Can you please explain to us what's happening? So I started explaining, and then I thought, well, you know, it's rather than doing that, why don't I just put up, I'll use the National Hurricane Center's information from their storm spotters, and I'll just put up updates, I'll just put up reports pulled from their information, and I can explain it, and I can use layman's terminology, and I can define stuff for people, and we'll see what happens. And so initially, the reactions were kind of mixed. I actually had some people tell me to quit wasting their time with
they
all.
They didn't have
stuff.
To read it.
Well, yeah, but
it was on your
so
page.
I almost stopped doing it there for a while, and I asked people, "Am I wasting your time? Do you not want to see this?" And I got so much positive feedback. I got like 97%, 98% positive, please keep doing this. And I got no negative response whatsoever. I had like two or three people that were like from the middle of the country that weren't affected by hurricanes at all because they never came that far inland. And they were like, well, you know, we really just don't care. And my attitude towards that was, then you're a selfish you-know-what.
Yeah. Well, what they also didn't realize and didn't understand, because when that thing came up, we thought we were safe in Northeast. We were 30 minutes from Greenville, South Carolina. That's how far north in Georgia we had gone. Well, that thing turned into a tropical storm and took out half of Georgia.
Yeah.
Including us.
Well, you know, I've been through hurricanes on the coast, and that's no fun. That is scary.
No.
And I've also, I'm in Huntsville, Alabama. And we're, you know, something like 350, 360, 370 miles north of the coast, of the Gulf Coast. But when Katrina, for a long time there, as soon as the hurricane's eye made landfall, they immediately downgraded it to a tropical storm or a tropical depression. It was just automatic. And now what they're starting to do is they're starting to actually look at the wind speeds.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happened when Katrina made landfall, the center of circulation of Katrina tracked right over us here, and it was still packing sustained Cat 2 winds when it did it.
Jeez.
We had shingles lifted. We had roof leaks. My husband had a gash in the middle, the rear hatch of his SUV had an 8-inch long gash through the enamel all the way down into the metal.
Oh, my word.
Yes. And it was sitting right outside our bedroom window, so, you know. Yeah. So, yes, I get this. I've been there. It's no fun. And, you know, if I can help people make the decision to clear out a Dodge in time, then the time I have spent doing that is a good thing, I think.
Well, if you save one life, Steph, if you help save one life because someone listened to you, and these people say, well, I'm in the middle of the state, it'll never affect me. Well, they lie, because, number one, the outer bands of those hurricanes on the east side are worse than the outer bands on the west side.
Right.
The backside of a hurricane is worse than anything, even worse than coming in. When you get the backside of that hurricane with those winds swirling clockwise, people don't understand, even in the middle of a state, you're going to get some bad weather.
Yeah. And you get the things can spin off tornadoes faster than you can sneeze.
And that's what happened with Irma. That's what hit us here at the house. It knocked down trees and uprooted trees. It was the tornadoes that spun out.
Mm-hmm. And those don't move like regular tornadoes.
No.
I took to calling them hurricane-nados because
I like that hurricane.
They don't behave like the ordinary tornado. They're going to follow the feeder band. Your typical tornado is going to move. There are some exceptions, but in general, a tornado track will trend from the southwest to the northeast.
Yeah.
But a tornado spawned by a hurricane follows the feeder bands.
Yep.
It doesn't go the same way. It doesn't. They're much shorter lived. They'll pop up and spin down much faster. They're much more unpredictable. You have to watch them.
Will have four or five boom, 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 right? Because they were sending out tornado warnings here in Indian River County, which is the next county up. There were like 20-plus tornado warnings and touchdowns within like a five-minute period.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what they do. Because they're being spawned from the small scale vortices, the small scale turbulences within the larger circulation of the hurricane, and because the hurricane is already spinning, it's already imparting a certain amount of spin to the individual cell, and they can pop off at a moment's notice.
And they're more dangerous and more deadly.
Well, yes, because you've already got so much damage going on, and they move so much faster because the hurricane is carrying them.
So we could have just named it Irma and her spawn of Satan.
Yes,
I thought you liked it.
Yes.
I thought you would like that. Hey, that'd be a good title for a book, Stephanie.
Oh, don't get me started.
Take it and run with it.
Well, I might at some point. One of the things that I've been doing of late is I've been writing popular science books about forces of nature, I guess you could call it. I've written one about solar activity. I just put out one that we're going to talk tonight about the New Madrid fault zone, and I plan on doing one on the Yellowstone supervolcano. So maybe I just need to sit down and do one about hurricanes.
Yeah.
Or hurricanes and tornadoes or something. I don't know.
Hey, I'd be the first in line to buy it because I'm going to tell you, when Matthew came through, we left. Matthew was supposed to give us a direct hit here in Port St. Lucie. It was supposed to come in from the east, the southeast, and come straight across over our house. Well, it decided it was going to go up the coast. It didn't want to play with us, so it just went on up the coast. Irma, on the other hand, was not supposed to come up the middle of the state. She took a turn and just decimated Florida.
You know, I've actually been sitting here trying to remember. We've had so many this year.
Mm-hmm.
I've been sitting here trying to remember which one was which. Yes, Irma was the one that everybody thought was going to wind up going over and slamming into Texas again.
Yes, yes.
After Harvey half drowned them, bless
yep.
her heart. And then it turned and went up the middle of the Florida Peninsula. Yeah, all right.
Yeah. Irma and her spawn of Satan. Take that title and run with it.
Well, you know, I had somebody suggest that the title for my book on the New Madrid Fault Zone is called Rock and Roll. And so somebody suggested that when I write the one about the Yellowstone supervolcano, it should be called Kiss Your Ash Goodbye.
I like that. I like that. Well, since you brought up rock and roll, let's talk about rock and roll. Since we're talking about natural disasters, what causes them, why they happen, why they go in cycles, and they do go in cycles, and why hurricanes and the fault lines are becoming more and more prominent, and I don't think it has anything to do with global warming. I think it has to do with the Earth's natural spinning down.
Well, the Earth is affected by a number of different things, and certainly there is an interaction between the Moon and the Earth in terms of tidal effects, and it is in fact gradually slowing it down, but it's not something that you're going to really notice that much. What actually turns out to be the more interesting situation in the case of the New Madrid, the vast majority of people don't even realize that there is a monster earthquake zone in the middle of the United States, right up the central Mississippi River. It's called the Real Foot Rift, and it is a leftover from the breakup of a supercontinent about 750 million years ago.
I did not know that.
And it very nearly tore what later became the North American plate into at least two, possibly three pieces. Because when a supercontinent forms, you wind up with all of these continental plates have gotten carried along on the conveyor belt of convection in the underlying mantle. So you've got the crust pieces of the crust floating on top of this semi-fluid rock, molten rock. And so it's being carried around. It's boiling. It's just that it's rock, so it boils really, really slow. and so you have convection currents set up in it. And so occasionally what happens is all these little rafts of floating rock eventually wind up coming together in the center of the pot, and they slam together and they stick, at least for a little while. But then what happens is over time, it insulates the molten rock underneath it, which gets too hot. So now you start developing a hot spot in the middle underneath that supercontinent, and that's wanting to rise up and break up the supercontinent and spread out. And so that is how supercontinents form, and that's how supercontinents dissipate. And it just so happened that when the supercontinent of Rodinia formed, it was the North American plate that was more or less in the center of it and took the brunt of all of that hot magma rising up underneath and pushing up and pushing out. And so the plate began to break. It began to tear. And it actually formed two tears, one of which partly mended itself and the other of which didn't. The one that partly mended itself is called the Southern Oklahoma Olacogen. And it's a crack that runs from roughly northern Louisiana, which at that point didn't even exist. There was an ocean there. Up through just barely clips the northeast corner of Texas, runs all the way across Oklahoma. Hang on a minute.
That's okay. Get you some water. See, ladies and gentlemen, this is why I love having Stephanie on the show, because I learn so much from this beautiful, smart, and funny woman. I did not know any of this. I'm just sitting here with my mouth hanging open because there was an ocean in the middle of our country.
Well, remember, it wasn't North America at that point in time. It wasn't even shaped like North America at that time. We're talking about literally hundreds of millions of years ago. So what you wind up with is as it tears, it starts to tear in a couple places. So it goes through, clips what is now Texas, northeast Texas, all the way across Oklahoma into Colorado, and on possibly as far as Utah. But it kind of self-healed a little bit. Some of the quakes that they still have in that area, though, are actually from this Southern Oklahoma Olacogen. The one that didn't heal is the one that started at the then coast, along about a little bit further east, along the northern state line of Louisiana, ran up through Arkansas, clipped part of Tennessee up into Kentucky, and up into Illinois and Indiana. And then it wound up spreading. It started to crack in multiple directions, kind of like if you throw a rock at a windshield, how you get that spider web. So it started a spider web out from there. And this is the real foot rift, and it has formed. The principal seismic zone is the New Madrid seismic zone, and so it's the one that famously made the Mississippi River run backwards in the winter of 1811 and 1812. It's the one that formed Real Foot Lake. It is a nasty little fault system. It has multiple faults in it. It is still active to this day. Unlike the San Andreas on the West Coast, which sits on the surface, you can stand on it, you can look at it, you can see it. The New Madrid faults are buried literally beneath miles and miles of river sediment. You can't see a thing on the surface.
Interesting.
But because of that very different geology, because the rocks underneath are largely cold and intact, and you've got this silt and sediment overlying it, it actually has the capacity for affecting an area, I mean seriously affecting an area with one single earthquake, that is anywhere from 5 to 10 times the area that the biggest quake on the San Andreas could affect.
Wow.
There were 3 to 4 major quakes during the series that hit in the winter of 1811-1812. Those quakes were felt all the way to the Front Range of the Rockies. They were felt up into Canada. They rang church bells all up and down the U.S. East Coast, and they woke people out of their beds on Caribbean islands.
Good grief.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And it's still active.
So worrying about California falling off the continent and becoming its own island is nothing compared to the middle of the United States creating its own island.
Well, neither one of them works like that. The San Andreas fault is, it's called a strike-slip fault, okay? All of the movement on that fault, now there are other faults in the area that move a little differently, but that's a plate boundary. The main movement is side to side. It's horizontal. It's not up and down.
Hmm.
So California can't fall off into the ocean. It can't form an island, except maybe millions of years in the future when the plates have slipped far enough past each other. Likewise, this one doesn't reach all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, so it can't form, you know, anything in the middle either. It's just going to wreck the heck out of everything in the middle of the United States the next time a big one goes off. And part of that is because too few people are aware of its existence. You know, out in California, hey, we know we got earthquakes. We know we got fault lines. We can see them sitting on top of the ground. We pay attention. We prepare for them. We bolt our stuff to the walls. We have, you know, building codes that are suited to withstand earthquakes. And then you've got, look at the number of cities in the central part of the U.S. and realize that they're only just now waking up to the fact that, oh, you mean we need to have building codes suitable for earthquakes? For magnitude 8 earthquakes? We don't have magnitude 8 earthquakes, do we?
Not yet. It's coming.
Oh, we did. That we had 4 magnitude 8 quakes in the winter of 1811-1812.
And they didn't learn from it?
4. Well, the St. Louis had a population of 2,000. There weren't any people there then. The population density was so low, the majority of people that lived there moved there. Their families moved there long after that quake series took place. That's the danger of it.
And I think we've also gotten apathetic to Mother Nature's sense of humor. And the fact that when we're not paying attention, she likes to be quite the jokester.
Well, she has a very odd and often inconvenient sense of humor. So in that regard, you know, I do too. So I sort of kind of get it. But at the same time, it's kind of like, ow. Think about our traffic for a minute. Think about how much of are shipped back and forth on semi trucks on the road.
Yep, all of our commerce. all of our, just about all of our commerce is done via truck now.
Uh-huh. And what isn't is shipped by train for the most part.
Yeah.
Now think about how many bridges are going to go down across the Mississippi River the next time we have an 8-point-something magnitude quake on the New Madrid.
And think of all the cars.
We're talking about loss of bridges from roughly Natchez, Mississippi, up to somewhere well north of St. Louis.
And people just don't think about that. They see the disaster movies and say, oh, this will never happen. Well, never say never.
Well, or it can't happen around here.
Yeah.
But it can, and it does, and it will. It's only a matter of time. And am I trying to scare people? No, I'm not. I'm trying to inform people. I'm trying to let them know, yes, there's something going on here. Yes, there's a reason for concern. Yes, you should sit up and pay attention. Yes, you should go ahead and prepare. Here are the things you need to do. That's one of the last things I put in the book is, okay, now that I have your attention, let me tell you what to do about it. You know, so, you know, that's kind of where I'm going with all of this.
So Rock and Roll, the Madrid fault, the New Madrid Fault System, is a how-to book as well as an informational book on a fault that nobody knows about.
Or that very few people know about, yes. I grew up in outside of Clarksville, Tennessee, which is just south of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, for those of you who are more into the military stuff and who know where that is. Whenever the New Madrid system went off, my family and I felt it. And in fact, when I was a kid, there was about a 5-point-something quake on the New Madrid, and I remember it very clearly because it was October. It was coming up on Halloween. School hadn't been back that long, and it was Saturday morning because I was sitting in Daddy's big armchair watching cartoons while he and Mom worked outside in the backyard. And the first thing I noticed was, oh, something's rumbling. What's going on? And then it got louder and louder and louder. And it was coming up from behind me, which was north, slightly northwest, which was the direction towards the fault. And then the house started to move. And the dishes in the kitchen started to rattle. And within seconds, I had to fling myself over the arm of the chair and hang on for dear life to keep from getting flung in the floor.
Wow.
Meanwhile, outside, Mom and Dad were standing on the ground, and they felt the pow as the quake wave came through. And they looked up, and they could see the house moving. And they could see it was a brick house. And they said they could see the mortar dust falling off from around the bricks. And they started yelling for me to get my you-know-what outside. I did. And, you know, it was quite an interesting little event. And so that was the beginning of my true, real interest in matters geological. And so it was one of the main reasons why I studied geology both in undergraduate and graduate school. It wasn't my principal field, but it was a secondary field for sure. And so I have background sufficient to be able to write this and explain it to folks and explain what it is, where it is, why it is, and what to do about it. Now the fault itself we can't do anything about, but we can certainly prepare ourselves. We can prepare our houses. We can retrofit our houses if they're already built. If we're building a new house, we can use earthquake-proof plans, put in the right kinds of foundations, use the right kinds of building materials, structure it the right way, make sure we have supplies on hand. All the standard sorts of things. This is also tornado country. So you want to think in terms of the whole area gets hit with a tornado, okay? Like a super outbreak kind of a deal. That's the kind of thing you would want to prepare for. Makes sense.
So this, yes, so this is what you talk about. And ladies and gentlemen, the name of the book is Rock and Roll, The New Madrid Fault System. And knowing Stephanie, like I know Stephanie, I would highly recommend this book because it's common sense. She's educating you in a fault line that I didn't even know existed. Now, I know that years ago, I lived in Jackson County, and this is where we go when the hurricanes come, which is 30 minutes from the South Carolina line. And I got woke up out of a sound sleep one morning because an earthquake came through.
Most of the eastern U.S., particularly around the Granville Orogeny, which is what formed the Appalachian chain, there are a number of old faults there from where those mountains busted up and folded up and rose up, and so occasionally you do get some shifting of the things. Some of it is, you know, it really hasn't, in the geological sense, it hasn't been that long since the last ice age. So you're looking at umpteen gajillion tons of ice that had been sitting on top of the continental plate and weighing it down and causing it to bow down. And so now then when it's removed, gradually that starts to rebound and lift back up again. It's kind of like when you sit down on your bed, how the mattress gives down with you. And then when you stand back up again, it gradually puffs itself back up to its normal height. It's just that it's a lot slower when you're talking about rock. So a lot of times what's happening is those areas of old faults that really aren't moving that much, occasionally you'll get a little bit of a quake in there because the land is still gradually adjusting after getting rid of all those giant ice age glaciers and stuff. So you can have things like that going on, certainly. Those are seldom going to even approach the capability of the New Madrid system, of the Real Foot Rift.
Wow.
So, because you're looking at the Real Foot Rift, you're looking at magnitude 8 or 9 potential. So it's not...
So ladies,
Go get
her book. Go get that book. That's just the first one that she's launched tonight. Now let's talk about the Division One series, because you launched the first three books on this show. Now you're launching the fourth one. Let's talk about Division One and then work up to this fourth book.
Well, Division One is my take on the urban legend of those guys that run around in the dark suits and that show up at the UFO encounters and the alien abductions and stuff and make the evidence go away. And you know, I have my own take on it, and you find out about the agency, it's called, within the ranks, through the eyes of Dr. Megan McAllister, an astronomer / astronaut who winds up in the, you know, kind of caught up in the middle of an operation. She's out in West Texas, in the middle of nowhere with her telescope, making an observing run, when she literally winds up getting run over by an alien perp and one Agent Echo, who is chasing said alien perp. And so when they find out that none of their equipment for making her cease to remember the incident is working on her, she winds up getting drafted. And so you learn about Division One, and you learn about the Pan-Galactic Coalition and the Galactic Government, as she learns about it, and as she is learning and being trained by Agent Echo to be his new partner and to be the prototype team for a new department, which will be kind of the a cross between a SWAT team and the Texas Rangers, if you will. And so she becomes Agent Omega, and she and Agent Echo are the Alpha One team, the prototype Alpha Line team. And so they wind up doing everything from rescuing lost alien children to taking out terrorist would-be assassins from other planets. And it's really, I've had so much fun writing this series, you just can't imagine. I get to inject all of my thoroughly inconvenient sense of humor into it, as well as you know, just really good chase scenes and fights, and they have ray guns and they have spaceships and, you know, all this cool stuff. And I've even written space battles. So, you know, it's just an immensely good time, and it's exciting, but at the same time it's fun, you know? So it's just something that I'm having a great good time with. Book one was released this past January. It's Alpha and Omega. Book two was released in the spring, and it's a small, medium, at large. Book three came out in July, for Christmas in July. It's called A Very Unconventional Christmas. And book four has just come out, and it is called Tour de Force. And book five is I'm in the process of getting it ready to go for a January release. Book six just went to the editors, and I'm getting ready to start on number seven.
Oh, my Lord. Well, on the Tour de Force, which is book four, this one that you just released,
yes.
What happens in Tour de Force?
Well, by this point in time, Echo and Omega have been working together not quite a year. There have been certain revelations about Omega's past that not even she knew, and they have become the premier team in Division One. And let me explain Division One for a second. I mentioned the Pan-Galactic Coalition. Well, they have a law enforcement and immigration agency, and they have divided the galaxy up into precincts, effectively, and each of them is numbered, and so it so happens that Earth is in the precinct known as Division One, hence the title of the series. So they are Division One's premier team. If all you know what breaks loose, you call for Alpha One, because they'll fix it or they'll die trying. So Tour de Force at this point is you have a very, very excellent team. They work well together. They're the top two agents in the entire agency. And what has happened is we now have a brand new race from the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy, which is a real galaxy, a satellite galaxy to the Milky Way. And so the Quartians come from the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy, and they want to have a first contact diplomatic negotiation, and they are interested in Earth for the first diplomatic negotiation. So they want to do a kind of exchange student kind of thing, and they have very stringent requirements for who qualifies. And these requirements narrow down the list of candidates to Echo, just Echo.
Huh.
And so Omega can't go. It's going to split up the team, and she's not happy about that, but not for the reason everybody thinks. Everybody thinks she's jealous of Echo, but what's really going on is she's starting to get these vibes about the Quartians, that just really are bothering her. And it's like there's something wrong here that just he really just doesn't need to go, because if he goes, it's not going to be what he thinks. And, you know, if he goes, if he gets on board that ship, he's not coming back. And I know it, and I don't know why I know it, and I don't know how to explain it to anybody else without them thinking I'm nuts.
So it would be safe to say that the story evolves around her trying to keep him safe from these aliens.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Continue. This is interesting.
Think about it. Yeah. This is a standard first contact operation. Nobody's worried about it. It's all par for the course and perfectly normal. And she's going, no, it's not. Somebody, please listen to me.
And without giving anything away, things get heated up in a hurry, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. In fact, that's really an excellent turn of phrase you used there. Things heat up in a hurry. So, yes, it winds up being possibly one of the most intense books I've written to date.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, Stephanie also wrote the Sherlock Holmes series. That's
yes,
how she started out. And now she's Misplaced Detective. And she's gone from that to sci-fi. This, talking about an interstellar woman of mystery, she can write anything. I mean, she writes about fault lines and geological happenings and hurricanes and twisters and aliens and space stations and Alpha and Omega and Sherlock Holmes in the future. If you have not read this woman's work, my question is, why not? She's an absolutely magnificent storyteller. You cannot put her books down, and then when you put them down, you're mad at yourself because you finished the book.
I have had quite some few people inform me that I was the cause of their losing an entire night's sleep because they simply didn't realize it was that late.
I understand that. Now, believe it or not, we are coming to the close of our hour.
Wow.
I know. It flies by. Now, I want you to come back. You're releasing a new book in January, right?
I am.
And then another one right behind that one.
Well, another one sometime next spring. I'm not exactly sure when. I'm thinking it's going to be May.
Okay, so if I bring you back in April, we can pre-launch the one you're going to bring out in May, and we can talk about the one that's coming out in January.
We can.
Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, she's going to come back in April because I love talking to this woman. Not only is she a Southern sister, but she makes my head spin with all this wonderful information that she opens up and pours down into my brain. And then in the middle of the night, I wake straight up in bed and go, oh, shit.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I get your books and your intellect on my mind, and it drives me crazy because I can't stop thinking about it. I want to know more. It's all your fault. You know that, right?
Okay, I'll take it.
Okay.
I'll accept the blame.
Honey, I am learning every single day from you, every single day. I am so blessed and honored that I can call you friend and bring you on this show and talk about things and teach people and learn things. It's amazing.
Well, I try. I don't know. I have a lot of interests, and those interests tend to come out in my writing. So if other people find it interesting too, that's great. If I can teach other people something, even better. So, you know.
Let's see. So tell the folks where you can be found, because I don't want us to hang up without them knowing that.
Okay, you can check out my website, stephanie-osborne.com, and you can find links to all of my books there and where you can purchase them. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. My books are available pretty much across the board on Amazon and Barnes Noble, and some of them are even available further afield, like Books a Million and stuff like that. Everything that I've got is available for Kindle or Nook, and if it's not available for Nook, it will be soon. Some of it, if it is big enough, it'll be in print if you prefer it in print. And I'm working on gathering up the short stories and things like that into an anthology so I can put them in print too.
Sweet. And ladies and gentlemen, we didn't even get into the fact that she believes in reading literacy and she edits for other authors. We will save that for the next time. But you can find all of that on her website. And I don't want you to hang up when the show goes off the air, because, you know, I want to give you all the skinny on all the places that you're going to go up and all that good stuff. But I want to thank you with all of my heart for saying, Yvonne, get me on the show. It was a perfect night, because I had a guest that had to cancel, and I was just going to take the night off. And, Lord, I'm glad I didn't.
I'm glad you didn't, too.
So, ladies and gentlemen, go find this wonderful woman. What? No, you can't go now. You got to wait till the show goes off the air. And speaking of off the air, this is our lineup for the rest of the week. Tomorrow night, my friend and fellow Southern sister Sherry Rentschler will be on here to launch her new book, Time and Blood. On Friday night, children's author Wanda Luthman will be on here to launch her new children's book. On Saturday night, my friend and erotic author and Internal Link magazine publisher and editor Hydra Starr and her co-author Adler Strauss will be on here to talk about a new anthology book they just released called Bon Appetit. Should be an interesting hour. So 8:00 Eastern Daylight Time. And don't forget Saturday night at midnight to tune your clocks back an hour if you're in the States, because we do fall back. So with that being said, you know what I tell you at the end of every show, ladies and gentlemen? Don't just feel special, be special. Because if you just feel special, you'll never be special. If you want to achieve greatness, would you please, please, please stop asking permission? Because nobody's going to give it to you. Just go out and do it. The difference between who you are and who you want to be is what you do. So who you are today may not be who you want to be tomorrow. So if it's not who you want to be tomorrow, then today you better start changing what you do. Put that one on and wear it for a while. If you want to advertise on this show and be a sponsor, go to advertisecast.com, look up Off the Chain, and I will promote you for a month on my show. My prices are very reasonable. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having had an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, I promise you, that is your trademark. If you don't believe me, try it. So, again, join us tomorrow night at 8:00 Eastern Daylight Time when we talk with my friend and fellow author, Sherry Rentschler, about her new book, Time and Blood. And remember, be kind to yourselves. Love yourselves. And with that, author Stephanie Osborne and I would like to wish you all a good night. And now you may go and check out her books and love them. Love, love, love them. And wait for the next ones. And then yell at her because she keeps you up all night reading. So with that, this is Yvonne Mason from Off the Chain, and we want to wish each and all of you a wonderful good night. Okay, the show is now off the air. You know I'm going to put all this up on podcast.com, Podcast Garden, SoundCloud, Mixcloud, and Spreaker, and I'll tag you in it. And as soon as we get off here and this thing uploads to archives, I'll put it up on my page and tag you in it as well so you can start promoting the daylights out of it.
Okie dokie, sounds good.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much for saying, Yvonne, get me on the show because I learned so much tonight.
Well, you know, I appreciate your letting me come on at such short notice. I don't always get a hit out of everywhere I go, but I almost invariably do when I come on here.
Oh, good. That makes me feel great.
Yeah, so that's a good thing, you know. So
excellent.
I always like to make sure that I come on here and let your listeners know that I've got a new book out. So
that tells me we're doing something good.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. You made my night, my friend. I made yours. You made mine. It's a lovely, lovely night.
Yes, it is. I cannot complain.
Do you want to come on the first week in April or you want to come on the second week in April?
Let me have a look here.
The 12th and 13th I know are taken, but every other day is open so far.
You know what? It looks like I'm wide open. I can do either one.
Well, pick a day. You want to do a Wednesday night? Is Wednesday good for you?
Wednesday works. Are you on the air on Tuesday at all?
No, not as a general rule, because that's when I get everything together for the week.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, Wednesday's good. Let's just go for. We'll do it the 4th.
The 4th. Okay. Done. I'll put you on my book, and any new covers you have, I'll wait. I don't usually do shows that far in advance to set them up. I'll do them after the first of the year, so you should have some new covers by then.
Okay.
And you can just send me the new covers and anything else that you want me to add to the bio on the show.
Okay.
That
sounds like a plan. Just don't let me forget. I've got it in my outboard brain now. It's in my phone. But I couldn't get along without this phone, man. It's got so much stuff in it. Don't let me forget, and I'll be happy to get all that stuff to you.
Okay. I'll send you an update after the holidays are over with, and I start getting ready. I'll start setting up I think some of the January shows are set up, and then I'll start working my way down the calendar. And as I get near to you, I'll say, Steph, I need your stuff because it won't take anything to put yours in because I've already got you in the system, so it won't take anything to throw yours up there.
I need to also look at possibly re-upping. I let my advertising thing lapse, and I probably need to look at re-upping that.
I would.
Okay. And you've still got the commercial, don't you? So.
Yes. In fact, do you want to play that one, or do you want to do another one?
Under the circumstances, that one would work because I'm still doing that series, so it should be all right.
Okay. We can do that.
Okay.
I'm making myself a note.
I got to find where it is. I got to pay you for it.
I'll just go to advertising. I'll send you the link.
Okay. All right. That's good. Yeah, because...
It ain't no big deal.
Okay. I've been so busy of late that I'm kind of...
I understand. Honey, thank you. I do. You are such a blessing in my life. And without your constant putting up the tracking, I might have waited too late to get Jack out of here, and I love you for it, and I appreciate you for it.
Well, good. That makes me feel really good. I can't begin to tell you that just that makes it all worthwhile. Because so yes, it is. It's kind of a pain in the butt to do it, but at the same time, I keep thinking, but there might be somebody out there that needs to know it, you know.
Yeah. So when we do this again, and Lord willing, we'll have hurricane season again, please continue, because the weather people here are a bunch of idiots.
Well, you know, it's really funny because one of the local weather forecasters on the station that I usually watch, he just got all bent out of shape about how dare these people on Facebook get on there that aren't, you know, actual meteorologists and dare to tell you what's going on. And I thought, and it's just the way he worded things, I was just like, he's been reading my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So and he resents it. And so that's when I made my post about how I was a National Weather Service certified storm spotter and I had degrees in this and this and this, and I wasn't coming at this from a harebrained whatever. I was pulling the data straight from the NOAA's National Hurricane Center and blah, 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 blah. I don't know if you remember that post or not.
Yeah, I remember. And I wonder, why the hell is she writing that? We all know this. Those of us that know her know this.
Do you know he never made another complaint?
Good.
So
sometimes you just have to let people know things.
Yeah. And so that's what I was doing. I was letting him know that I am not coming at this half, you know what. And that I knew what I was doing. You know, I wasn't some ignorant little country hick, whatever. And I was a scientist, and I was going at this from a scientific standpoint. And I was going to keep doing it, dang it.
Well, all he had to do was look you up. I mean, you've got enough degrees behind your name to string a train.
Well, you know, some people are too busy and so full of their own self-importance that they can't be bothered, you know?
Well, it's their loss. It is absolutely their loss.
No argument there, but, I mean, you know, that's just kind of the attitude some people have.
I don't see him being a rocket scientist.
Well, that was... Excuse me. Hay fever has been horrible here this year.
Uh-huh.
But that was what that post was for, was I was letting him know that I was not some kook.
Well, I studied up on how long it takes a meteorologist to be a meteorologist and what they have to go through to be a meteorologist. All they got to do is be able to read a weather report.
Pretty much, yeah. And see, I can do that.
So I don't know.
You've got the funny thing is, there's a lot of people. I went through one time, and I went through all a bunch of the on air staff of the Weather Channel, and the vast majority of them, you know, they might have a bachelor's degree, and the few that have, you know, graduate work. Or the Dr. So-and-so, you know.
Right.
But that vast majority of them, I've got more education than they've got.
Yeah, because most of them come straight out of high school or college, and all they have to do is learn how to stand in front of a green screen and read off of a teleprompter. They don't understand weather patterns. They don't understand wind shear. They're reading it off of a teleprompter.
Pretty much, yeah. Exactly.
They don't understand that you can take a pine straw, and if the wind is strong enough, it'll go straight through a 2x4 like a nail.
Well, you know, and that's all about momentum and impulse. Those are physics, and I've studied physics, so I get it. You know,
and they don't get it.
Well, they. Some of them know it can happen, but they don't understand why.
Yeah.
So, you know, and It gets kind of funny from time to time. the stuff that I see them do and talk about and whatever, and I'm just kind of like shaking my head, especially when they start trying to talk astronomy. And why on earth they think they can talk astronomy when they don't want, you know, somebody who's not a meteorologist talking meteorology or climate
exactly.
or whatever. You know, I don't know. But they think they can talk astronomy better than somebody that's actually done it.
Like I said, they don't know they're dealing with a rocket scientist.
Well, you know, I think I scare people.
Well, I do too, but I love it.
Well, they look at me and they think they don't stop to think that, well, maybe she's, you know, just puts on her pants the same way I do, and there's nothing, you know, she's not going to be. I don't know. It's really kind of interesting to watch.
I think they're afraid that you're going to talk above their level of intellect and then make them feel insulted because they don't know what the hell you're talking about. But that's not you, because that's not the way we Southern women are raised, no matter how smart we are.
Well, it's not, and it's not something that, I mean, that's just not my personality to do it that way either.
No.
So the ones that I have the most trouble with are usually the men who have a graduate level training too, because I think they're afraid that I might actually be smarter than they are.
And their fragile egos can't handle it.
yeah. And, you know,
I love it.
And that's not the way I am either, you know?
I know.
So you won't get all up in my face about it, and I won't get all up in yours.
You're one of the most down-to-earth, honest, kindest people that I know, and you treat others with the same respect that you expect to be treated with.
Yes. Yes, I do.
You like to inform. You like to teach. You like to make a difference in a positive way.
Yes. And I don't think that's too much to ask.
No, not at all.
I had a doctor, and I had so much trouble with that man, because he was one of them that, you know, he had to be the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to know he was the smartest person in the room. And he got bent out of shape because I was not stupid. And because I could understand what he was talking about and ask questions.
At an intelligent level.
Yeah, at an intelligent level, and make him have to answer.
And he didn't want to do that.
And, you know, I would come in there, and if I said white, he'd say black. If I said down, he'd say up. I came in there one time, and I had a respiratory infection. I'd had the flu, and I knew it. And it wasn't going away like I wanted it to, and I've had enough cases of bronchitis. When I was a baby, I had double pneumonia, and once you've ever had pneumonia, you're prone to it again.
Yep,
and I've
had
actually
all my life.
Had pneumonia a couple times, and so I came in, and I didn't say I had pneumonia. I didn't say I had bronchitis. What I said was, I've been diagnosed with them in the past, and I don't want it to get to that level again. And it's not going away like I think it ought to. Can you please check me out and see what we need to do here? Well, he got 12 kinds of bent out of shape. He informed me that I did not have pneumonia. I did not have bronchitis. I probably just, as soon as he looked at my medical history and found that my dad was an asthmatic, oh, he knew what it was. So he goes through all of these. He kept me there for over 2 solid hours running test after test. And I could look at the x-rays, and I could see the infection on the x-rays. And then he puts me on this great big machine that is, it's basically what it is. It's a giant nebulizer like you'd use if you were an asthmatic.
Yeah.
And he put me on it, and it's there. The way they do it is they test your lung capacity before and after you use it.
Yeah.
And
it's
a diagnostic for asthma.
Yep, Jack has to do that every 6 months.
And so he puts me on the thing, and I'm busy reading the instructions. He goes off and leaves me. You're not supposed to be on that thing but 5 minutes max. He went off and left me for over 15.
Oh, my Lord.
Now, and this is the stuff that's in the asthma inhalers, okay? And he knows I'm diagnosed with anxiety disorder. I was flipping vibrating when I left that office.
I bet you were.
You know what he did? He diagnosed me with, quote, unspecified diminished lung capacity, unquote, and then prescribed an antibiotic normally prescribed for pneumonia.
Dumbass.
Uh-huh.
He couldn't stand it because you knew what you were talking about, and so he had to just be stupid.
Yep, you got it.
Well, on that note, my darling, I'm going to say let me get this show up in archives so other folks can hear this wonderful story, too.
Okay.
I love it. So I'm going to go put you down for April the 4th. I'm going to play your commercial, and I'll send you the link, and I have had a wonderful time. Thank you, thank you, thank you for saying get me on the show. I love it.
Likewise, and thank you for finding a way to put me on the show.
Oh, honey, for you anything. I'd have found a way.
Well, you know, you could have taken the night off, you know?
No, not for you.
I appreciate that.
Well, you're special. So. You're the special girl.
I try, but I wonder sometimes how special I really am.
You really are special.
Okay.
You're special to me.
Well, likewise, hon. Thank you so much.
All right, darling. So I will be talking to you later.
Okay, hon. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.